By the time I'm finished, how bad that was will be a far memory. You'll say that sermon was a lot worse than that singing. I neglected to give to Lex, but Josh and Aisha sent a thank you note for providing food yesterday for their family, and keep those kids in your prayers. I just don't know. I don't know. But keep Josh and Aisha. Lost their little baby this past week and had funeral services yesterday. There's a story of a famous 17th century religious leader by the name of Roger Williams. Passed away in 1683, and he was buried in a poorly marked grave in the backyard of his home. And around 200 years later, around 1860, one of his descendants decided to have his body exhumed and to be moved into a more suitable location. But when they got inside the grave, they didn't find a body. All they found were some rusted coffin nails and some rotten wood. But they did find something inside the grave that amazed them. It seemed that an apple tree had begun growing next to the burial site, and one of the roots had grown into the spot where Roger Williams had been laid to rest, taking the shape of Williams's body from his head all the way down to his heels. And as it grew, apparently when it encountered Williams's skull, it continued to follow that path of least resistance, inching down the side of his head, his backbone, his hips and legs, molding itself closely to the contours of his body. The corpse itself was gone. It had been absorbed into the tree through its roots. Essentially, the tree had eaten Roger Williams. And over the years, it had produced a tree that had produced apples that had been eaten by the people of the community for years. Well, the Bible tells us that when Jesus returns, that we'll all rise from the grave and we'll have a new body. But I guess the question is how is God going to get Roger Williams' body back together again? That's one of those things that's a mystery to me, but it's not a mystery to God. There's a story from 1994 that a guy by the name of Brian Kelly, who was a fireworks handler, he went out with a bang. Literally, he went out with a bang at the grand finale at a convention of fireworks technicians near Pittsburgh. And as he was dying, he told a family member that he wanted his ashes loaded up into a fireworks shell and exploded, scattering his remains across the sky. Now, again, how is God going to put Brian Kelly's body back together again? Well, that might be a mystery to some, but that's not a mystery to God. There's the tale of the painter who died and was cremated, and his friends mixed his remains with the white paint and used that to paint the white lines on U.S. Highway 50 somewhere between Cincinnati and St. Louis. How's God going to get that guy back up again? But again, that might be a mystery for some, but it's not a mystery to God. When that trumpet sounds and Jesus descends, I imagine that he could use a celestial scraper and scrape that guy off the pavement if he needs to do that. The idea that our bodies are going to be resurrected from the dead, even hundreds of years after we've died, is a difficult concept for some people to accept. Probably on your computer like mine, MSN might be your home page. And since this is that time of the year, that they've decided to run a lot of articles on the resurrection of the dead. And their articles a lot of times are in agreement that Christians down through the ages have had difficulties accepting that the bodily resurrection of the dead is going to happen. And one of these articles is by their religious editor of Newsweek magazine. And commenting on the idea of the physical resurrection, this writer called the idea a conundrum for believers. That's sort of, you know, that big word to say you guys can't really believe this, can you? And several times throughout her article, the idea of physical resurrection was unbelievable It strained the credibility of even the most devoted believer. It presented credibility problems, and she concluded, for my part, I just don't buy it. Now again, this was an article from Newsweek senior editor of the religious section of the magazine, and she flatly rejected the belief that there would ever be a bodily resurrection. Now, to be fair, she's certainly not the first person to have ever had problems with this idea. The Sadducees of Jesus' day rejected the idea that anyone would ever rise from the dead. When Jesus spoke to his disciples and he told them that he was going to die and to be buried and to rise again, in Matthew 16:22, Peter couldn't believe that. In the next chapter, the disciples, when they heard the news, they were filled with grief. And after Jesus rises from the dead, when Peter and John race to the tomb and they find it empty, John 20 verse 9 tells us that they still did not understand from the scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. And then several years later, when Paul writes his first letter to the church at Corinth, he's dealing with individuals who are bringing that very same heresy into the church there. So again, when the senior religious editor of Newsweek dismisses the concept that there's ever going to be a bodily resurrection of the dead, she isn't saying something that's unusual. I just believe she's saying something that's wrong. And as I continue to read that article, it's odd that she doesn't really ever appear to be attacking the resurrection of Jesus so much as she does the questioning the possibility of believers like you and me that we will ever rise from the dead. But again, I believe the Bible counters that argument by asking in places like 1 Corinthians 15:12, where Paul says, if it is preached that Christ has been raised from the dead, how can some of you say that there is no resurrection of the dead? The resurrection of the body is one of those major teachings from Jesus. Repeatedly, he tells his disciples that he himself would rise from the dead on the third day. In Matthew 16:21, he says there from that time that Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed on the third day, be raised. And then in Matthew 17:22, he says the Son of Man is to be delivered into the hands of men and they will kill him and he will be raised on the third day. And then in Matthew chapter 20 and verse 17, we find Jesus repeating here, at least for the third time, he says, see, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified, and he will be raised on the third day. And then the Bible, of course, assures us that since Jesus rose from the dead, that we too will rise from the dead. That Jesus rose from the dead as sort of a way to prove it could be done. And since that is true, why would people, sort of like that lady at Newsweek, struggle with the idea of such a clear biblical teaching? I think number one, they reject that idea of a bodily resurrection is just because they can't understand it. That lady said it was unbelievable and it presented credibility problems. She just didn't buy it, were her words. For people like her, the bodily resurrection doesn't make any sense. People like her have never seen it done before, so therefore it can't happen. Paul tells us that though we actually have seen this sort of thing, and we've seen it many times over. He says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, beginning in verse 35, that some will ask, how are the dead raised, and with what kind of body do they come? And he says, you foolish person, what you sow does not come to life unless it dies. And of course, he's speaking to those that have worked in a garden or have planted a seed in the ground. What Paul is saying here is that every time that you've planted a seed in the garden, that seed has died. But it doesn't stay dead. It's buried, it died. But again, because of the power that God has placed in that seed, it springs back to life. It rises from the ground to bear fruit. In the same way, one day our bodies will be buried. And when Jesus comes again, the dead shall rise, whether, I guess, they want to or not. There's a story of a cemetery in Hanover, Germany, and there's there an unusual grave. On top of the grave is a huge slab of granite and marble that has been concreted together, and it's fastened with these steel heavy clamps. And it belongs to a woman who did not believe in the resurrection of the dead. Yet strangely, she directed in her will that her grave be made so secure that if there happened to be a resurrection, that it could not reach her. One marker inscribed these words, "This burial place must never be opened." But that didn't work. In the dirt beneath those slabs of marble and granite was a seed. And in time, even though it was covered by those huge blocks of stone, it began to grow, and slowly it pushed its way through the dirt and forced its way out from the slabs. It forced its way through the marble and the granite, and it was so gradually shifted that the steel clasps that held them broke in their sockets. That tiny seed had become a tree, and it pushed aside those stones. Therefore, that grave became open. Similarly, when Jesus comes again, all of the dead shall rise. Again, whether they want to or not. Folks don't have to understand it. They might think that it was unbelievable or presented credibility problems, but that just isn't going to matter. I think there are two reasons why people might reject the idea of the resurrection of the dead. In Matthew chapter 22, we're told of the time that the Sadducees approached Jesus, and there were men there who refused to believe in the resurrection, and they intended to trap Jesus sort of with a puzzle that they knew that he couldn't answer. Of course, back in the days of Jesus, the law of Moses decreed that if a woman married a man and he died without having any children by her, that man's brother, if he wasn't married, he was obligated to marry her and make sure that her part of the family inheritance was protected. And so the Sadducees, they began weaving this story together about this woman who's been married and her husband's died. And so she marries the brother. But the bad news is that brother died, and then she has to marry another brother, and so on until she ends up marrying seven brothers in all. It would seem that this is a very difficult woman to live with, right? But smugly, the Sadducees ask Jesus, in the resurrection, whose wife is she going to be? It's a good question, right? And Jesus only shook his head, and he explained to them that they didn't know what they were talking about. He said, at the resurrection, people will neither marry nor be given in marriage. They will be like the angels in heaven. But before he explained that to them, he touched on two major reasons why the Sadducees refused to accept the idea of the resurrection. He says, you were wrong because you neither know the scripture nor the power of God. There were two reasons why the religious leaders, the religious Sadducees, rejected the idea of the resurrection. One, they didn't know the scriptures. When confronting the Sadducees, Jesus quotes Exodus 3:6, and he says, but the dead that are raised, even Moses showed in the passage about the bush where he calls the Lord, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And you can almost imagine Jesus smiling and then saying, he's not the God of the dead. He's the God of the living. Essentially, Jesus is saying is, why would Yahweh be the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob if they are dead and never coming back? The Old Testament scriptures are just loaded with promises that there's going to be a bodily resurrection. Psalm 16:10 says that you will not abandon my soul to Sheol or let your Holy One see corruption. Job in Job chapter 19 says that I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will stand upon the earth, and after my skin has thus been destroyed, yet in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another. My heart faints within me. And Isaiah prophesies in Isaiah chapter 26 that your dead shall live, their bodies shall rise. You who dwell in the dust, awake and sing for joy, for your dew is a dew of light, and the earth will give birth to the dead. The problem for the Sadducees is that they didn't have any scriptural proof of God's promises. It was just that those scriptural promises didn't say what they thought they should say, so they chose to ignore those scriptures that they didn't agree with. That second reason given where is because they didn't know the power of God, that their God wasn't big enough to raise the dead, that their God didn't have the power, their God wasn't the master of the universe. He was sort of just a slave to their tiny imaginations. Their God was just this pathetic deity who sat upon a shelf and was brought down when maybe they needed to polish him up a little bit or bow before that image. And then they would put him back up on the shelf again and go about living their lives however they chose to do so. But the result of their faith in that kind of God was a hopeless future. Sigmund Freud probably says it best when he says, "And finally there is a painful riddle of death for which no remedy at all has yet been found, nor probably will ever be." Or even as the Apostle Paul puts it, "If the dead are not raised, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." For people who refuse to believe in God's promise of the bodily resurrection, death truly is the ultimate enemy. As one put it this way, fear of death makes us act foolishly, committing ourselves to self-destructive habits, enslaving ourselves because we see our bodies deteriorating. We numb ourselves by any means necessary. We try to act younger than we are, and we make fools of ourselves, sometimes destroying our families in the process of trying to reverse this irreversible process of aging. Because we are perishable, we try all sorts of potions and products. We even try all different kinds of ways to show misconduct, to try to escape the inevitable. Again, death for those folks is an escapable hole in the ground. Their God can't raise anyone from the dead because that God isn't real. But I believe our God is real. Our God can do to people, has the power to do whatever he wants to do. Our God has proved that in the raising of Jesus from the dead. And on that last day, he says that he will raise you and me too. Paul, though, says in 1 Corinthians 15:51 that, "Behold, I tell you a mystery, that we shall all not sleep, but we shall all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed." Now, I like what Dwight Moody once wrote. He said someday that you will read in the papers that Dwight Moody is dead, but don't believe a word of it. At that moment, I shall be more alive than I am now. For I was born in the flesh in 1837. I was born in the spirit in 1855. That which is born of the flesh may die. That which is born of the spirit shall live forever. And that is the promise of the resurrection. It's the promise that God has given to us all. That God has included that promise into the very act of our salvation. When someone wants to become a Christian, we baptize them into Christ. We put them down into the water as into a grave. But of course, we don't leave one there. We bring them back up as a resurrection from the dead. Paul puts it this way in Romans 6, that we were therefore buried with Christ through baptism into death, in order that just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, we may too live a new life. Because as Christians, we've joined Jesus in his death and burial, we too are also raised up to a new life. And in baptism, God has reinforced his promise that one day, the last day, that he will raise all from the dead. And again, because of that promise, we don't really have to fear death the way that the rest of the world does. There's a woman who tells the story of her sister who died as a young child. And the death was very devastating for the father. And every year on the little baby's birthday, the father would go out to the graveside and he would cry and he would cry and cry. And his little baby girl there buried beneath that dirt grave that she would never return. But then one day he became a Christian. And the woman wrote that from that day on, everything changed. She said her father still went to the cemetery every year, and he would lay flowers on the grave, but that the tears no longer came, because he now had the hope of the resurrection. Well, I hope that we all could have that sense that father has of the hope of the resurrection. Maybe this morning you're here, and you don't have that hope of the resurrection. I would urge you to not leave here this morning without having that. Please come if you have a need, as together we stand and we sing.